Hello, my name is Mary Mack, and I'm the Executive Director of ACED, the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists, and I am pleased to welcome you to the ACED webinar platform and our wonderful podcast that we are recording today on data breach discovery. It's sponsored by our fabulous partner, BIA. We have two presenters here that are going to be in conversation about data breach discovery. We have Ryan Bilbury. He's the Managing Director at BIA. He's their resident expert in data breach discovery. And we have one of our beloved SEDs, Mark McDonald, who is the Senior Vice President of Business Development at BIA. And he's going to ask Ryan a series of questions about what is and how does data breach discovery work. It's an exciting application of technology used for e-discovery applied to a very, very different and very important problem. And we're just so pleased to welcome both of you, Ryan and Mark, to the podcast platform. Mark?
Thank you very much, Mary. We are excited to be here. Appreciate you, all the work that you do for the community. And we're excited to be here talking about this. And as you said, data breach discovery is unfortunately something that's becoming a part of corporate dialogue, law firm dialogue, and so I have a series of questions I'm going to be asking Ryan, and I think we should start off with really, Ryan, let's define data breach discovery. What exactly is it? and let's talk a little bit about how it came to be a service that is now being offered.
Happy to do so, Mark. Good to be here with you today. So I think to answer that question, the first thing we actually have to say is, what is a data breach? So a data breach is the unauthorized access or use or retrieval of data by a person, a group, a service, something like that. It can be an internal or external party. In fact, internal is one of the most prevalent that we see happening. It can involve theft or illicit use of data, but it can also be the unintentional exposure of data. And usually when when you talk about data breaches, and you hear about these things all the time, there's a security incident and then it becomes a breach. They talk about closing the door, they talk about finding how the breach happened, but there's usually very little discussion about how you get from closing the door on the investigation until that point where you actually create the notification letter, that letter that probably everyone listening to this podcast has received that says, I'm sorry, Mr. Smith, your data has been breached, your data has been hacked, something like that. So it's the process. Yeah, compromise, exactly. So it's getting from that point. The term we use is data breach discovery, is that quick and efficient and cost-effective review of the huge amounts of email and loose files that are often exposed in this kind of a situation.
And so what are we looking for when we do a data breach discovery? What is the purpose of it?
The purpose is to sift through that data, and the end purpose is really one thing, and that is to get that notification list out. It also includes notification to oftentimes law enforcement or regulators, but mostly it's to get it out to the individuals who had their private or personal data affected or compromised in the breach.
Right. It's all about the PII.
PII, it also could be healthcare data, personal health information. It could be FERPA data, which is educational data. GDPR also falls under this category. There's been no end of discussion about that over the last year, so I don't think we'll have time to dig into that today. But there's a lot of different categories that could be covered there.
Right, right. So my second question kind of, builds off the first question. How does e-discovery play into cybersecurity and data breach response? Specifically, how are those two things related?
Sure, Mark. So I think there's a little bit of a discussion about that. So the type of data that we're dealing with, as I mentioned, it tends to be email files, office files, things like that. Databases can also be compromised, but we're really talking here today about email and that sort of thing. So that's very similar to e-discovery, and you have to use e-discovery tools to get to that data. You have to collect that data. You have to process that data to get it to a point where you can actually do something with it. Advanced text analytics are a huge key to this. It's one of the most important things you can do, getting into that data, mining it to find candidate documents, candidate people, affected individuals that are in there. But also streamline workflows. Another key part of e-discovery is hugely important. And then finally, tying it all together is just the detailed understanding of privacy issues as a whole.
So we're taking the data, Are we applying keyword searches to it? How are we actually finding the PII?
Sure, that's kind of the old way to do it, is keyword searches to find things that are similar. And PII, by the way, most common thing is like a social security number, so that's a great example. Social security numbers can generally be found by an expression search. You can put the pattern in and it'll bring it back. But there's a lot of different definitions of what these, you know, what this private data, what this sensitive data really is. So, and keywords can be very over-inclusive, leading to a hugely expensive process. I mean, and that's really the most expensive part of all this, is when you get a human being sitting there looking at these documents. So there's other things. There's the analytics that can identify all different kinds of patterns, keywords. You can use clustering to a certain extent, but you know, one of the biggest problems we face is non-searchable data, stuff that doesn't OCR, either because it's a fourth generation copy, it's handwritten, and especially when you get into the healthcare world, you find a lot of this. So there's some other things you have to do a lot of times to find documents that might have this kind of data.
Right. No one wants to spend $1 million looking through emails when it's not a court case, it's not a litigation, it's not an SEC investigation. But yet, we're still required to, and more states are starting to create their protocols and then mandate those protocols as far as what the reporting looks like, what the notification looks like, what kind of timelines we have. And I've seen some really aggressive timelines for turning these things around. States are continuously releasing these protocols, and they're kind of mind-blowing.
You got it, and I'll tell you what, they may not want to spend $1 million, but the average cost of a data breach in the United States is $3.86 million. So guess what? If you have a breach, it's going to cost you. There's no two ways about it if you get to this state. As far as the different things about the different states, so what's interesting to note is that the state regulations, of which there are many, and they're overlapping, they're intersecting, there's things that are covered by regulation, other by laws. It's based on the location of the person whose data was exposed, not on the location of the company who was holding that data.
That's interesting.
So it doesn't matter that you're a New York-based company. It matters that you've got a customer whose information you have that lives in Colorado. And I mentioned Colorado specifically because they have a relatively new law that states that you have to notify that person within 30 days of knowing that the breach occurred. That's a very aggressive timeline. I can speak from personal experience. That is a tough, tough deadline to meet.
So you've got a team of people that are concerned about how the breach happened. Did someone click on an email, click an attachment, download malware? How did that all transpire? Then how does that get remediated, right? So you've got that process, but then you've got this process looking for the PII. Do those two things happen in tandem? Does one happen, then the other happen? How does that generally play out?
It's generally going to be sequential. The first thing that happens is there's some kind of a notification within the company that there is some kind of a security incident. That gets escalated. Hopefully the company has a plan in place. And when you talk about that plan, you should have your, you know, what attorney you're going to call, what data breach response you're going to call. And that plan, by the way, shouldn't be sitting on the computer, because one of the most common types of data, data incident is ransomware, where your computer systems are locked down. So it's a really good idea to have your data breach response plan printed out, sitting in a binder and sitting on the shelf. So when this happens, you can just pull it down off the shelf.
Old school. Three-ring binder.
That's exactly right, and go to it.
Good tip, by the way.
I'll credit my our friend Chris Dix for bringing that one up.
Shout out to Chris Dix.
There you go, down in Florida. So the more hardcore technical investigators are going to come in. They're going to figure out that something happened. They're going to fix it, and they're going to close that door. But then you've got to move on with the process, which is collect the information that was compromised. And compromised might mean it was seen, exfiltrated. There's a lot of different definitions. Usually, counsel is going to make that definition in any particular case. At that point is when this process, this data breach discovery process, starts, where you process the data, you search the data, use analytics to get to that subset of data you're going to look at. But there are no two ways about it. You've got to get human beings in front of it, capturing the data points, the person, the social security number, you probably don't have to capture credit card numbers. Again, every case is a little bit different, but you're typing in a lot of data, which ultimately becomes, you then have to later on deduplicate it to get to a hopefully unique and clean notification list that you will hand to company and counsel and let them send those letters out that go out to all the people.
So it's an art and a science. Different companies are going to tackle this different ways, but it's humans, it's technology, it's workflow. It's a new paradigm for us. So I think that answers question number three, which, where should data breach discovery fit into the organization's overall data breach response plan? My next question is, don't data breach response offerings typically handle these services?
The answer is generally no. I mean, in my experience, there are some companies that do both the investigation and also do this mining of data to what we call data breach discovery.
The brute force review of the documents.
That's exactly correct. There are some companies that do that, that kind of follow that process from beginning to end. But a lot of the companies don't want to do that. Their expertise is in data security, and that's what they're focused on. They want to be notified. They want to help you fix it. They want to remediate it and get you a plan so that it never happens again. But they don't want any part of doing this this extremely human-intensive data mining effort.
Right. Where companies like BIA and others in our industry who have done lots of doc review and set up databases and have expertise in AI and things like that can really kind of help move the ball down the field.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And, it's one important thing when we talk about these projects is one, like I said, have a plan, but then it's a team. It's got to be a team effort. You have a lot of stakeholders that are involved when this happens. You've got a lot of people with competing wants and needs, even within the company. Marketing wants to do one thing. The C-suite wants to do another thing. Legal wants to do something else. There are potential downstream ramifications to a business, reputational impact that can directly affect the bottom line of a company if they're exposed to something like this. You've then got the outside parties. You've got outside counsel. You've got the breach response team. You've got all these different parties. It's really important to have everybody working together, but it's also important to have somebody that's leader. Somebody has to be making the calls on it, whether that is the general counsel, what is that? That's a senior attorney from outside counsel, and then communication. It's just vitally important. I mean, especially as the timelines get collapsed, as we were talking about, it's extremely important to have the communication. Open lines of communication, because it's very easy to lose 2, 3, 4 days in just trying to decide how are we going to do this. And when you've got a 30-day timeline, that's a huge portion
10%
of your
time.
Exactly. It gets eaten away right away, for sure.
Yeah. Next question is kind of a two-parter. So what data do you collect? Kind of answer that a little bit. How can it be used to mitigate the effects of a data breach? I'm going to add a curveball here for you.
Sure.
What happens if you miss something? What happens if you go through this process and you don't do a good job and you don't capture somebody's social security number and it's not properly reported to the regulatory agency or to the person, whose data it belongs to?
Sure. Answer the two-part question in two parts. So we talked about a little bit. It really can be anything. And we talk about email and office files, but it's really anything that sits in your email. It's attachments to email. It's photographs. It's a copy of your passport, your driver's license. Also could be sitting on a file share. What kinds of data are there? There's all kinds of things. The biggest problem data that we always see is we come across a spreadsheet that's got 20,000 customers, including their address and their social security number. Or you find the employee list from HR that's got every single employee in the company. That's a huge problem right there. So that's the kind of data you can see. What happens if you miss it? That's a great question. It really depends on the jurisdiction that you're in. And the first thing is, how are you ever going to find it? How are you going to know that you miss it? You may not know. A lot of these data breaches now are resulting in litigation, class action, or individual litigation.
And that's how you find it, exactly.
That's exactly right. And that's the most dangerous part, because it's very easy. I mean, it's very easy to see, to get kind of lazy about this, say, we did a good enough job. And that's all well and good until 18 months later, when a class action has been filed and the discovery happens in that class action, all of a sudden, here are 1,000 people who didn't get a notification, who are part of the class action, who provably had their data compromised.
Right.
And what happens then? It's trouble. But again, what actually happens, it really is going to be defined by the jurisdiction. What are the penalties?
Right. Thanks for hitting the timeline in 30 days, but here's a nice couple $1 million sanction because
exactly.
You missed a considerable amount, or who knows what it might be, depending on...
That's exactly right. So, I mean, we're not really focused too much on GDPR, but GDPR basically is open season to fine anybody, anytime, for anything. And this new law that's going to come online in California, I think it's later this year, is really similar to... I mean, it's a kind of a scary law with the ramifications and costly And that's the biggest thing is companies have to keep an eye out. And it's, you know, as they say, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And, you know, you can do things ahead of time, you know, having the plan, having the appropriate security, monitoring, et cetera, because if this happens, like I said, it's an expensive proposition to deal with this once it does happen.
Right. Well, we're 15 minutes in, Mary, and I think that we've covered all the questions that we had. Ryan, in closing, is there anything that you'd like to add that maybe we didn't touch on?
You know, I've been through a lot of these. I've worked on a lot of these personally, and you know, I've seen some of the traps, some of the landmines that exist within this. And I've said some of the things that I'd always like to convey, which is have a plan, have a team,
print the plan,
exactly. But you know, getting the right people in the room, and this isn't necessarily a pitch for us, but you know, I've seen companies that try to do this themselves. And, you know, I really can't stress enough that you've got to get the right team pulled together of
and not generally, a fake it till you make it kind of
that's
game plan.
That's exactly right. You get your outside counsel involved. You get, you know, the appropriate people that are closing that security gap and get the right people that can help you get to, you know, meet all these requirements, meet all these regulations. Because I'll tell you what, the scope of these efforts can be far more than company or council anticipate if they've never gone through it. I always like to cite, you know, if just 25 email boxes are compromised, that could easily mean a million documents that need to be, you know, that are subject to this review, and you just push that number way over $3.8 million, I can promise you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's, you know, I could probably talk on this for another 8 hours, but since we have a timeline today,
I'm not getting warmed up, actually.
Totally. But, no, well, it's great. Thanks for letting me join you here today.
Ryan, would you consider coming back for another follow-up?
Well, that depends on if you invite us back, Mary, but we're absolutely ready for that anytime. And for those of you who don't know, we've also done a webinar on this exact topic, which you can find on the ASIDS website as well, on data breach discovery. But we would be more than happy to come back and maybe even bring a guest speaker next time.
Excellent. And so if people are interested in learning more from the two of you, how should they best contact you?
You can contact us by directly through the website at biaprotect.com. There's a whole section on data breach discovery. My contact info, 212-240-2282. You can use an automated dial to find me or my email address, mmacdonald@biaprotect.com. Same for Ryan, rbilbrey@biaprotect.com. 24 hours a day, 365 a year, 366 on leap year. We never sleep.
this is why e-discovery people are so good for the data breach discovery, isn't it?
All yeah, right. We're so used to it, that's for sure.
I want to thank BIA for being a fabulous affiliate of ours. And Mark, you've been a strong supporter since day one. And Ryan, wonderful to have you back. And look forward to the next podcast that you guys will
thank
be
you very doing. Much.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.